Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Remix My Fitness podcast, where we learn that there is more than one way to train, eat, and live. I am your host, MC Kim, aka the Kind Intelligent Man, and what a show we got for you today. We, you know, on the top of every episode, I always mention there's more than one way to train, eat, and live, and we're gonna get into all of that today as we talk to, I would like to say now, a good friend of mine, Philip No, who is an Olympian. He is someone who dedicates his life, his time into sculpting his body the way he sees it and the way he wants it. We're going to be talking all things glutes, that mean our butt, right? Literally our butt, and all things aesthetics, all things how to activate, and all things on how to do this all at home. And can it even be done? And we're going to hear Philip's thoughts on this. But before we get into the show, I'd like to remind all the listeners out there, you could do your boy, your guy, MC Kim, a lot of help by subscribing to the podcast, leaving a comment, leaving a star rating. Let me know. Hit me up. If you got questions, you can leave it there as well. And of course, you can find me on the social, on Insta, on Facebook, and even on LinkedIn if you want. Right? I'm really not a hard person to find, but you all know, hey, or at least you should know, my favorite way for you guys to get in contact with me would be the old school way, which is the email way, which you can find me at mckim@remixmyfitness.com. So let me tell you about the origins of how we got into this show. So I have an insecurity I want to share with you, all right? I don't have many insecurities, but one of them is I have something, a syndrome, I'm going to call it, all right? A syndrome that I've dubbed the long back. Right? And if you are not sure what the long back is, right? If you were to see somebody from the side who had the long back, essentially they would have this one line that goes straight down their body from their back all the way down to their heels, which basically means that they have a flat butt, okay? Or no butt at all. All right? Doesn't mean that they're not strong, because I would like to think I'm pretty strong myself. But I've had this syndrome. I've had the syndrome for all my life. I've never really had a butt and never really cared for it until later in life. In fact, it's funny because I used to get scolded from my mom for wearing pants, and my pants would just naturally sag on its own. But of course, back in the day, if I gotta date myself, back in the 90s, it was cool to wear your pants down low, and you know, I wasn't really into that kind of fad or anything like that, but my pants would just kind of naturally come down low. Even if I was wearing a belt, it wouldn't really fit on my hips or on my waist really well, you know. And on top of that, because I was a pretty fat, chubby kid, I didn't really like wearing the belt anyway, because it felt uncomfortable. My pants would just sag. And even later, as I became a teenager, a young adult, they would start to sag. And then I started to kind of understand, like, as I was buying my own clothes at the time, that the pants just didn't fit right. Like, it'd be really tight in the legs, because your guy, MC Kim, he trains. He started working out when he was very young. And I would build, my thighs would just be thick. They'd just be really thick. But my pants just wouldn't stay on my hips. And I never got why. And then it dawned on me that I had no butt. I had a pancake butt, I had a flat butt, I have a long back, whatever you want to call it. Whatever you want to call it, I had it. So I went on this mini mission in my 20s to figure out, how can I resolve this issue? Can I even develop that area? So anytime that I want to develop a certain part of my body, I lean towards the professionals. And the professionals in this case are going to be bodybuilders. They're going to be fitness models. They're going to be bikini models, beach models. Because why? They work out. Okay, one of the primary reasons why they work out is they work out to sculpt their bodies. They're literally artists. Artists who take their body as stone, as clay. And they get to decide, I'm going to chisel this area. I'm going to lump some more muscle in this area around my shoulders. I'm going to put some more muscle and definition around my back. So in a recent conversation with a bodybuilding friend of mine, you know, I told him, like, look, I spent all this time at the gym trying to develop my glutes, you know, working the squats right, doing a whole bunch of banded exercise, and I would just get heavier and heavier. And I saw a lot of great results out of this. I started to kind of develop a little bit of a badonkadonk, you know, and my pants were fitting nice, and, you know, this insecurity was all kind of all of a sudden kind of gone. But since the start of the pandemic, this has kind of crept back. It's kind of come back because I don't have access to the heavier weights. I actually haven't returned back to a regular gym just yet because I've been so focused on working out from home. I've actually enjoyed training at home. It's been great. And now I have this whole setup because of my virtual workouts, training with my clients at home. Is there a drawback to this? Is there a drawback because I can't work with heavier weights or I don't have access to heavier weights? I've started to revert back to the long back. So I reached out to my bodybuilder friend and I had a conversation with him. And I, throughout the conversation, and we were trying to brainstorm some ideas of what I can do at home, he said, you got to talk to my guy, Philip No. He is super knowledgeable. He's an Olympian bodybuilder. He's a personal trainer, a coach. He owns his own studio. And on top of that, is an infectious. Like, you talk to him, and he's just on. He's just on all the time, off air, on air, you know, before we decide to even do the podcast together, after. The guy is just full of life, full of energy. And if you feel like you're in a slump or you're just like, man, I don't want to go to the gym today, you got to listen to today's show because he is going to get you going 100%. All right. And you guys will hear that a few times from Philip, and it's going to get you going. All right. So we get into all things on, can we even develop the size, the mass of our glutes at home? Can we even target that? Can we do that with the tools that I have? Right, which is what I'm going to share with Philip today. We get into his top three favorite glute exercises, and then we just get into it. You know, just being able to sit down and talk to another fitness professional, you just can't help but just bounce around ideas. We get into all kinds of topics like nutrition for weight loss, how to train at home, what are some common roadblocks that somebody has. And you know what? I don't want to give too much away, but he shares this story. One of his pre-workout rituals is he eats a cheeseburger with fries the day before a competition. Not only that, but he ate two cheeseburgers and two set of fries a day before the biggest competition, the Olympian competition that happened earlier this year. So we're going to find out why he does something like that. There's got to be some benefit to it, right? So sit back, relax, and let's go and talk to Philip No. Hey everyone, in today's show, Philip's going to be talking about three different exercises to develop your glutes. So what I've done is I've put this together, and if you visit today's show notes page at remixmyfitness.com, you'll be able to see what those exercises are and how to do it correctly so that you can develop glutes and banish the monster of the long back to where it came from, all right? So let's get into it with Philip No. I would like to welcome to the podcast, Philip No, a partner and head trainer at Conquer Fitness and F45 Training Fitness Facilities. Hey, Phil, how's it going?
Good, brother. Good, good, good. Just trying to survive right now, right? As all personal trainers, anybody in the fitness industry right now, we're all trying to survive. We're all trying to make our way of the industry right now and see what's happening.
Absolutely, Phil. I'm gonna ask for a little bit in a second, but, you know, kind of going to what you're saying, right? Like, it's... you know, this really kind of shows the passion that's out there for a lot of the personal trainers, transformation coaches, you know, holistics, nutrition, because let's be honest, nobody's really doing this because of the money, right? There's not that much money. I personally think in like the fitness industry, like martial arts, things like that, it's a really like passion driven thing. And for us 100%. To, and for people like yourself to continue to do it and wanting to do it rather than, you know, there are other easier way outs, I think. So, you know, all credit to you, man. And I wish you all the best this year.
Thank you, brother. And you're right, too. People who have passion on what they're doing, they always try, they always have success. And I find that with the fitness industry, it's very, very hard to make a living. So if you're not passionate about it, if you don't love it, if clients don't know that you love it, it's very, very, very hard to survive.
Yeah, man. So Phil, why don't you tell us, how'd you bring it to the business, man? Like, how did you, that would you really always into it? Like, this was always for you?
So back in the day, my brother, my uncle, they got into bodybuilding. Okay. And I was a fat kid. I was a fat kid, and I got bullied because I was a fat kid. So
you and I, we have a lot to talk about then.
Bro, 100%. So one day I decided I don't want to be like this anymore. So I started running, I started jogging, I started getting into fitness, I started asking my brother for help, and slowly but surely I lost a lot of weight. And then things started to change. I started martial arts, I started Taekwondo. Mm-hmm. And I did Taekwondo for about 15 years.
Wow.
And I opened up a studio with my coach as well. And then coaching was always part. I love coaching. I taught tots all the way to adults. And then I got into bodybuilding because, you know, as an Asian, we're not really built like the other guys, thick, big. And I wanted to be muscular. I wanted somebody to look at me and say, damn, that guy looks strong. So what do? We do bodybuilding. We lift weights. Yeah. And I fell in love with that as well. And then and I slowly started transitioning away from Taekwondo and martial arts. And then bodybuilding led to personal training. And this is where I am.
That's amazing, man. We're very similar. Like, I was also a very fat kid growing up. My parents were convenience store owners, so we had ample supply of whatever we wanted, right? So
yes.
I did Taekwondo for many, many years. I've done martial arts my whole life.
Yes, sir.
And then like yourself, like I found weight training when I was 16 years old. I was terrible at every sport, but for mm-hmm. whatever reason, the weight room called me.
Exactly.
By the YMCA. And then one summer I come back and I didn't even notice I changed. I didn't notice I changed. I come back. Everybody starting to notice, like, Jimmy, what happened to you? You know, girls started talking to me. I was just like,
that
whoa,
so
what's
that
going on
so
here?
True.
What's going on? So
exactly. You actually don't notice that you've lost the weight and your body made a transformation until someone sees you. And then
exactly.
That's when you notice, oh my God, that guy has changed. And then you realize you see yourself in the mirror and you see your past pictures, absolutely different.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. You know, absolutely right. Like, you know, and on top of that, because I think I was having so much fun. Like, it gave me something to do in the summertime. Like, you know, I didn't really have a lot of friends. I was bullied. I was bullied, you know, a lot myself. You
exactly.
know, I had a core group of people who were like, oh, you know what? Let's go train, you know, at the YMCA at the summer. And I loved it, man. You know, being at the convenience store, I had access to all like the, you know, Flex magazines, Muscle and Fitness,
that is awesome.
Right? And just like flip through it. And I was just like, oh man, it's like, okay, this is how you train. This is the set that I got to do. Like, people,
that's
growing
exactly
up,
what I did.
Yeah. You know what I mean? who was some of you guys like growing up? Like, who'd you really like?
Ooh, Flex Wheeler.
Flex Wheeler, of course.
Flex Wheeler. And there's this British guy, I keep on forgetting. He's always on the Muscle RX podcast. Dave Palumbo, and I can't believe I'm blanking his name right now. But yeah, Arnold, everybody loves Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Sure.
Everybody loves Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah.
Right? The Rocky series, him slowly building up that physique in Rocky IV mm-hmm. is one of my main physiques that I was trying to build back in the day.
The one where he's like out in Russia and he's like, the other guy has like, he's training with the state of the art like devices, and then Rocky's just there like, you know, just pushing, but like has like a, you know, a piece of wood on his back, things
exactly.
like that.
That
right? Yeah.
Those montages that they made, I probably watched that a thousand times over and over again.
Yeah. Mine still, and I think he still has it too, like Dexter Jackson. Like
Dexter Jackson. I can't believe I forgot about Dexter Jackson.
Yeah, 100%. He's amazing, man. And like, you know, I watch like his YouTube videos now. He still has like a lot of good knowledge out there. He's still keeping
100%.
Up with the times. Like, Dexter's amazing. Amazing.
Yeah. I recently just came back from the Olympia because I competed in the Olympia amateurs a couple weeks ago.
Amazing.
And I wanted to watch Dexter Jackson step on stage for the last time, but we were in a time crunch, so we had to come back. So I missed that.
Right. So this is, you know, we've alluded to, we've been talking about it. This is why, like, I brought you on. You know, we are talking all things glutes, right? Like the butt muscle, right? And I thought, I was like, I'm trying to like reach out. We have a mutual friend between us.
Yeah.
And when I was talking to him, he was just like, okay, I was like, hey, Jamie, I was like, I need, is there any like bodybuilders you can talk to me like that would be, you know, be pretty good on the podcast? And he's like, yeah, I got one. And he's just like, I gotta get you to talk to Phil. And he's like, he's so charismatic. He on stage, he's like so confident, and he's so funny up there. And I'm like, all right, let me talk. This is exactly what I want
to
talk about.
I appreciate you, brother.
Yeah. So then that's you know, we're at home now, and for me, I've been saying like I'm used to doing like going to the gym and, you know, racking up the squat. Like, I mean, I'm not a crazy squatter or deadlifter,
totally.
But I've always felt like, okay, those are the things that are gonna help me build some size. And I've noticed being home now, even though I'm still working out,
yes.
I mean, I'm losing a connection. I'm trying to figure things out. I'm trying to figure out why, like, I feel like my pants are just all of a sudden just like falling off my waist. There's nothing to hold it up there, you know. So
yes.
Yeah. So I thought, okay, you know, I gotta ask the professionals, the people out there who are, you know, it's their lives to go out there and you know, to sculpt their bodies. So
yes,
for yourself, like I guess my number one question is like, you know, what do you think? What do you think about the glute muscles in general? Like, are they important in the in your scene?
100%. If you're looking at the human body, the everyone talks about what holds everything together. What's the center of the human body? Those are the glutes. The glutes, it's your pelvic area. It's through your hips. It's through your back. It's connected through every single muscle fiber in your body from your toes to your head. So people who have, like, I would say people have injuries in the lower back, their knees, their upper body. It's most of the time, I would say 60, 70% is connected to the glutes. And I've worked with a lot of clients and they've always come to me, oh, Phil, dude, I have a weak back. I have a weak core. I have a weak knees. I have weak legs, ankles. So, and the first thing we do, I test their glute strength. And what happens? Their glutes are weak. So we start developing those glute strength first. And then you'll start to slowly see everything starts to disappear. That pain starts to disappear and their life starts to become better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, very, very similar things. You know, people always tell me like, oh, you know, Jimmy, like, can you tell me what's the best, like, give me some lower back exercise. And I'm like, why lower back?
Exactly.
My lower back hurts all the time. And I was like, you know, if your biceps were hurting, like, would you go out and do more bicep curls?
100%
Probably not, right? Like,
yes.
You know, so it's like that isn't like, I know like where you're thinking might be important, but like, we got to start, you know, strengthening the surrounding muscles as you're saying, right?
Exactly.
For you, like, where do you consider, like, if I can take the classic bodybuild approach, like in terms of the actual size of the glute or the groups of muscles. So for example, like, we always consider like chest, back and legs to be the big muscles. And we'll say like triceps and biceps, you know, maybe even shoulders are considered like smaller group muscles, right?
Secondary muscle groups. Yeah.
Secondary muscle groups. Thank you.
Yeah.
And so where are the glutes, would you say in that scale, if you could kind of put it in a scale somewhere?
As a physique competitor, when somebody turns behind it and they have a nice strong back, they have nice strong legs, but those glutes, if there isn't any pop in those glutes there, it makes your physique look completely out of sync. You need big, strong glutes. And everybody says squats are the number one thing. Deadlifts are the number one thing. And I also recently I found, if you follow somebody called Brett Contreras, he's like the glute doctor. And I listen to his podcast. I listen to his material. And a lot of the time, if you start isolating the glutes, you'll start to develop a more complete structure in those glutes, because glutes are developed by three sections. There's a lower glute max, there's an upper glute max, and there's a glute med on the outside. And I find that squats are good, deadlifts are good, but once you start isolating with hip thrusters, with kickbacks, with banded movements, you start to develop glutes that are awesome, insane.
So let's talk about that. Like, so how to develop the glutes. So I've always traditionally thought, all right, I'm going to do like heavy squats. My rep range is going to be anywhere between like 8 to 12, you know, of course there'd be some variation to that. And, you know, absolutely, that those numbers, 8 to 12, 15, you know, you would say like, that's generally like the, you know, build the muscle stage. But if I do things like, let's say like kickbacks or like banded exercises, I could technically do like 20, 30, 40 reps. And that all of a sudden, absolutely, I go into thinking, oh, it's cardio, or it's, you know, it's, it's muscular endurance type exercises.
Yeah.
Build muscle doing exercises like that.
Oh, 100%. You're always still building muscle. If you look at bikini girls that compete, they do the 20 rep range, they do the 25 rep range, and they were doing those adductors or the abductors, and they're doing banded movements. They're doing kickbacks. If you look at their glutes, they have very well developed glutes. And that's from movements like the hip thrusters, movements like the banded adductors. And I think you don't really necessarily need to have a gym. You can do these movements at home. And if you're looking, if you follow Conquer, I've made a couple glute videos to add to this podcast.
I saw those, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah. And I made those videos because, again, you don't need equipment. You can develop nice, strong glutes. You can focus on zero in and on those glutes by just doing movements at home.
Oh, very cool, man. We're going to get into the movements in a little bit. And I'm going to probably maybe put you on the spot and ask maybe for like a couple exercises, a couple sets and things like that.
Yes, sir.
But, you know, being a competitive bodybuilder and an athlete, like what goes into actually having to actually train and to look and to shape your body in a certain way? Like, tell me, like, you, when you started off, you know, you were, as you mentioned, like a fat kid, and then you found fitness and health. Like, how long did it take for you to actually make a change, or for you to see a change, or for other people to see a change?
I found that. So when I started, I was in Taekwondo. Being a Taekwondo athlete, you have to be lean, you have to move quick, you have to be fast. And during my competition in Taekwondo, I was like, I can't be skinny anymore. Like I said before, I wanted to build some mass. So I started weightlifting. And being in the gym, for me, when I'm training, I really zero down, focus on training, and nothing, I don't think about anything else. And I just really focus on the training itself. And somebody approached me one day, is like, dude, you have to compete. Your physique right now is looking awesome. You're a complete physique. So I was like, maybe I should try stepping on stage. So I had a coach. I always have to have a coach, no matter what you do. You always have to get somebody that guides you, somebody to look at you and gives you proper critique. And through having a coach, I started to shape my body. You look at your weaknesses, you look at your the body parts you need to work on, and you slowly start to improve them. And so, yeah, I met an awesome coach. His name is Team Green Physiques, or Jason Green. And we've been working together for years, and it's still a work in progress to develop a physique, because it's like I always tell my clients, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's excellent advice, because it takes a lot of work to get competition ready, right?
100%.
What you look on that day one as I had a fitness model actually also a good friend of mine tell me, she says, you know, I would look the best that day.
Yes.
But I would feel the most terrible, like on the inside.
100%. I would say, so it's good that you said that, because the last month during prep, I was like to my partners, I can't function. Your body, your low body fat and your hunger. If you're hangry, multiply that by 100 and make it last for a month or two. And that's how you feel every single day. I told my partners, because of COVID, our gyms are closed anyways, give me a couple of weeks and I'll come back to the business and I'll focus on the business, because I couldn't do anything. I couldn't function. And most of the time, all you're really thinking about is your next meal and your training session.
Yeah.
And that's.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear you, man. Like I've had to cut weight for jiu-jitsu. Like cutting weight for bodybuilding to me seems like absolutely insane. Cutting weight, because I cut weight for jiu-jitsu. Like I've had like garbage bags on. I've had, you know, all that stuff. And then I feel like my muscles are like, they feel dry. And I can step on the scale and I'm just like, okay, then I got to fight in 30 minutes. And I'm like, oh no. I'm like, you know, so I don't cut weight anymore. I just fight at the natural way, which is also like not really a greatest idea, but
you feel stronger, you feel healthier.
Yeah, right? You feel stronger, and like my recovery is so much faster, right? 100%. Like I just So that I'm not worried about cramping and things like that. But talk us like, so if we can talk like, say a typical, like a typical say like workout set. So for example, what I'm trying to get at is this. Let's say I have no experience in glute training today.
Oof.
And how long, you know, from what you've seen, how long would it take for me to develop, you know, some size, some mass, some strength into my glutes? Would it take like 6 weeks, 12 weeks, 16 weeks? Mm-hmm. Of course, thinking like, you know, this is a marathon, but, you know, when would I start to actually see the results?
So if you notice beginners, the beginning stage of bodybuilding, that's probably the first 12 weeks, 15 weeks of a beginner's bodybuilding, you make the most gains. You make the most because that's stimulus. Your body doesn't know that stimulus before. And once you put that stimulus into your body, or once you create that stimulus and you put your body through it, those are the best gains. Mm-hmm. And so what I've noticed, I've had a client who very flat glute, couldn't activate it, couldn't even, you know how you squeeze your bum?
Mm-hmm.
She couldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So it took us 12 weeks of consistent training, proper diet and nutrition, because you need the calories to build the muscle. So if you're not eating properly, no matter what you do, those muscles won't develop. So I say from 12 to 15 weeks, that's the golden period of a person who's just starting out in weightlifting or just starting out and building muscle. That's the best period. And I think if you're zeroing in and you're getting a proper guidance, proper coach, oh man, the first 12 to 15 weeks, I'd say is the best.
Yeah. Like the best, I think, in general, you know, like anytime I take a break off from weight, like I'm dying to see, like when I can get into like a regular weight room, you know, I'm going to be so weak and it's going to be so discouraging, but I know I've been there. I'm like, all right, next week, I know I can put on an extra plate and then 100%. Another plate. And then it's like, it's such an amazing feeling, man. You just feel like, oh, I can go on forever until you can, of course.
So true. I agree. and it's like after a show too, because you're so depleted. Your body is so depleted with calories. I mean, you're eating, I mean, when I before I stepped on stage, I had burgers and fries, which is probably one of the best burgers and fries I've ever had in my whole life. But you're because you're in such low calories and your fat percentage, your body fat percentage is so low, it's like starting over again. I stepped back into the gym a couple of weeks ago. When I came back, it's like, dude, I'm like beginner training again. It's your weights, 45 feels like 100. Mm-hmm. But they call it the rebound gains. Mm-hmm. And the rebound gains is at that period of time, you're feeding your body, you're training, you're going to gain some muscle mass, just like a beginner's weightlifting journey. Mm. Yeah.
Did you just say that you had burgers and fries before your competition or after your competition?
So before my competition, what we do is, with my coach, I worked with him for weeks and weeks and weeks. And during those weeks, like a 12-week, 16-week prep, we do mock tests on see how your body reacts to certain foods. So before some bodybuilders, before they step on stage, they have burgers and fries. I had burgers and double burger, I had a double fries, and I had a slice of carrot cake before I stepped on stage. So before the day before.
Is that something to do with the sodium inside the food, or is something to do with the fats inside the food?
So we call something called the peak week, where we deplete the glycogen in your body and we deplete your carbs and your muscles as low as we possibly can. And then the day before, or a couple of days before, we start to amp up your carbs. So we start to fill the muscle up with glycogen and we super saturate the muscles with carbs. And as we super saturate those muscles with carbs, it's hunger. It wants those carbs. Mm. So it absorbs those carbs in. And what you look on stage is you look 10 pounds bigger, but and you look 10 pounds fuller, because if you look at a person at a day one of peak week, so that's a week of, they're scrawny, they're small, they still have a definition, but they're not as big, not as full. So then we slowly start to amp up the carb intake, and their body starts to fill up, the muscle starts to fill up, and they look different physique from the end to from the beginning to the end of stepping on stage.
That's like you know, some of the story with it was with Ronnie Coleman and was it Kevin Levron, Kevin Smith. They came to this locker room and like a day before competition. And, you know, Ronnie Coleman was always coming in like second or fourth.
Kevin Lebroni.
Kevin Lebroni. That's right. Kevin Lebroni. Yes. And then he's like, here, take a couple shots of vodka.
This story is famous.
Yeah. Right. And like, maybe it was the sugar, maybe it was the alcohol, you know, and maybe it made him more relaxed, you know, whatever it was. But like, I was like, listening. I was like, what? I was like, Ronnie Coleman, a couple shots before competition.
It does relax your body, and the alcohol reduces your cortisol, because a lot of people stress before they step on stage, and cortisol is the most detrimental hormone that anybody can have in their body. Mm. Increasing cortisol destroys everything. You're holding fat, you're holding water, and so I heard that story so many times. You took a couple shots of alcohol. Alcohol during I know a couple of people that take alcohol to dry out a little bit. So it pulls water out from underneath the skin. And yeah, he started to destroy everybody after that, after Kevin Lebroni told
you. Yeah. When I heard that, I was like, oh, these are different. Like you mentioning the burgers and fries. Like I haven't heard anyone say it, but I haven't met anybody who's actually done it, but I've heard that, a couple of guys who, you know, compete in jiu-jitsu with, they'll have like some odd foods before stepping on. I'm just like, it's like, oh, you know, it's like a ritual, man. I have to have it, you know. It's, you know, I'm like, okay, you know, if it's gonna, hey, you guys are way better competitors than I am, so what do I know, right? So, you know, during this time, you know, a lot of people are home, they don't really have access to regular gym equipment. For yourself, you said you just competed in the amateur Mr. Olympia. How did you make that happen? Did you have access to a gym? Do you have access to equipment? How did you work out for that?
So I'm actually blessed because of Conquer Fitness. So I am part owner and part partnership with that. So I do have access to my facilities. And so because I'm so blessed, and I know the biggest commodity right now is having access to a gym and having access to equipment. So I did have access to my facility to train at.
Okay. So you think without that equipment, do you think you would have still competed or could have competed? Like, no. Let's say you, no way.
Absolutely not. I mean, You can do banded exercises, you can do body weight exercises, but there's something about loading a weight on your body and having your body go through the I would say, the strenuous of weight and poundage. Your body, your muscles just reacts differently. Mm-hmm. And I have a person who had a friend who didn't have access to a gym, and all she did was banded exercises. Her physique was not the same.
And she also did go out to compete, though.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So do you think when you went to the competition, do you feel like maybe the people in from what you saw, your bracket, did they look like everyone had access to a gym, or do you think there was a few like, oh, you know what, you were doing that push-ups at home?
There was a couple guys. Yeah. But the majority of the guys who competed, they somehow had access. And I think this year, whoever competed are the people who were blessed with gym access.
All right.
And I know a bunch of friends just stepped aside and said, I can't compete this year because I don't have a gym access. So yeah, anybody who competed this year, they were blessed with access to a gym.
Very cool. And you were, and then why don't you tell the listeners, how did you do there?
So I got seventh in the world. And
amazing. Congratulations.
So it was a great experience. I'm in the short class, so classic physique. I do classic physique. And I was classic physique A. So that means anybody below between 170 pounds to 175 pounds, they compete in that category. And between 5'6 and 5'7. So I'm about 5'6 and 3/4. And so I competed in classic physique A. And there I competed with the international guys from all around the world. And it's big competition out there, man.
Oh, I know it is, man. Yeah. I know it is. It gets rough out there, doesn't it? Like people, there's some rough housing I've seen many times.
Yes. The good thing is, most of the time we're competing backstage, you meet most of the guys are they're very friendly. They're very mm-hmm. friendly. They're very supportive. There are some guys that sit aside and they don't want to bother anybody. Right. But there, most of the time, you meet a lot of good people backstage. You meet a lot of good friends.
Yeah. Absolutely. So for you, person will be me. How about we make it real easy? Like, and I mentioned, okay, so we figured out, all right, I got no glute training before. I don't even really know how to squat. So now I'm kind of learning how to squat. I got access to these bands.
Yeah.
We know that it's going to be about 12 weeks. You recognize that, okay, this guy over here has got like some terrible glute activation skills.
He's
got a super long back, you know, and like, what can we do to help this guy? Can this be done at home? And can this be done with, you know, some base equipment, like maybe steps or
a little, even 15, bottles, even water bottles or like sandbags or like backpacks. You can definitely do a good workout. You can definitely develop muscle groups with basic equipment.
Okay. So with the basic equipment, with the glutes in mind, what would be like three exercises that you would recommend?
So three exercises I would recommend. I would start, the squats are king. Mm-hmm. But most of the time, people, you have to make sure when you're squatting, you're angling your body in a proper position where you're not only just activating your quads, your hamstrings, but also activating your glutes. So sometimes what I found it, number one movement, I would say is squats, but a squat in a particular fashion where you're pushing your knees, you're abducting your knees out, you're tracking your knees over your toes. And sometimes I like to have a client have a band around the knees. So they're pushing, they're actively pushing outwards to really feel those glutes. If you abduct or push out your knees, you can start to slowly feel your glutes in a squat range of motion. So number one would be squats.
Number one, squats. You know, staying on squats, what is your opinion on, are you like an ass to grass kind of guy? Are you like a 90 degree kind of guy? Like, what kind of guy are you?
I am a slightly below 90 degrees.
Okay.
I am a slightly below 90 degrees.
Hey, so, me too, man.
Exactly. You don't have to go ass to grass. I was like, dude, the risk of injury going ass to grass is so proportionally high so that you can still develop proper lower legs or lower limbs, but going slightly below 90 degrees.
Yeah. You know, I 100% agree. I can do it.
Yes.
But I feel not stable doing it. Like, it doesn't feel right. And I know how to do it. And or at least I put a lot of thought into it. I'm like, the average person, like if I would give it to, you know, someone who I'm just training with, it's like, this is our goal over here. But like, yeah, it's not worth the risk and reward, you know?
Exactly. 100%. And when you get to a position where you're so low, your lower back starts to dig into your hips. And then the injuries to reward is not worth it.
Yeah. So let's say I'm squatting at home. I'm thinking body. Are you thinking like body weight squats? Are you thinking like a goblet squat? Are you thinking the shoulders? Are you thinking everything? Like all the different variations all kind of work the same?
if we're talking about progression, especially for beginners, I would start with a box squat. So you're starting from a chair position, and you're mechanically, you got to make sure from the box squat, people can position their body correctly before they do the squat. Mm-hmm. So from the box squat, I would go right into a body weight squat once they develop proper mechanics of a box squat. And then from a body weight squat, that's when I start loading weight on. So you want to progress through the stages because you want to make sure you're activating the muscles properly.
So you're liking, let's say the weights that I want to use are like, you just say like suitcase squat. You're thinking like front squat. You're thinking goblet squat. You're thinking sumo squat. What would be the next progression with weights? And maybe I only have dumbbells or like a kettlebell like laying around.
The next progression would be goblet squats because I really like goblet squats. Mm-hmm. Goblet squats hits, again, full body. And you're holding the weight in a position where you're also activating your core. You also got to make sure you're retracting your shoulders and you're keeping your spine neutral. So I like goblet squats as a next progression after that.
Very cool. Yeah. So exercise number one is squats, and then squats variations of exercise number two.
Exercise. So after that compound movement, let's start isolating. So the next isolation movement I find I love to do is hip thrusters. A single leg variation or double leg variation. I would start with the double leg variation first because I find that a lot of people can't do the isolation movements unilaterally. A lot of people aren't strong with that. So a bilateral movement with both feet planted, hip thruster, keeping that glute activated, keeping that glute squeeze at the top. That would be my second choice of a glute movement.
All right. So now I'm curious what your third is. You know, this is the third one. I find this is where the variations happen, where people have a difference of opinion. So let's hear number three here.
So there's one movement that I always have my clients do who have weak glutes. And it's a boring movement to do, but clamshells or banded clamshells. Because I hate doing them, but if you're doing them correctly, those glute meads, those outer glutes, that's so important, gets activated, gets fired up. And I would say my third movement would be clamshells. Even though it's boring, you have to do those clamshells.
Clamshells with a band, though.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Progression. Again, sometimes you can start with body weight first and then progress to the bands and make it a little more difficult. You can do the variation where you're bending your knees. The next variation I would do is keeping your legs extended and having your hips pressed against the wall so that you're not rotating your hips, you're stabilizing the hips, and all you're using is your glutes to lift up your legs.
There you go. That's the top three lists on how to build the butt right there.
That's all the glutes right there, 100%.
Except for, you know, if I can go back to you know, your client that you mentioned that couldn't even squeeze her own glutes,
they couldn't clench their glutes.
Couldn't clench their glutes. You know, maybe for a lot of listeners that sounds like very a preposterous idea, but for myself, even I've squatted, you know, since I was 16 years old, when I can first get to like a squat rack, having no idea that there was a way where I can engage my glutes, where I can activate my glutes. So I became very quad heavy. Because I'm lifting. And I'm like, how much can I lift? And I'm just purely using all my legs. My legs getting jacked, but my butt getting like staying the same.
Yeah.
Until finally I get educated towards it. I'm like, oh, and that takes more thought into having to engage. But once you can get that going, I'm like, okay, I know what's happening.
Firing those glutes.
Why do you think it's happening? Or why do you think that happens? And have you noticed maybe an increase in the people that you see having that issue?
So what I found that back in the day when we were kids, what did we do when we were young? Do we spend most of the time outside or do we spend most of the time inside? I mean, remember back in the day when you were young, when I was like 8 or 6 years old, I would go home from school. And the first thing I would do is drop my bag, eat some food. I'd run outside with my friends.
Oh yeah, I would go with my video games.
There's some people, some of the kids, most of back then, we didn't have access to video games and stuff like that, right? So we were a lot more active back in the day, I found. And as the increase of the I would say electronics and computers and video games, that's when people started to become more sedentary. So, and that's when I found that the active lifestyle started to decrease and people started to stay inside. They have their phones, you know? So I think lifestyle now is more sedentary than how it was before. And that's when ailments started to happen. And
did you run into that same problem that I did? Like when you start squatting, you just start squatting and then not realizing you were using your glutes, or was I the only me that didn't figure it out?
For me, I'm naturally I'm a natural squatter, so I naturally activate my glutes really, really well. Back in the day when I was a kid, I used to have a big butt and I hated it. Huh. I was always trying to hide my glutes because like it's sticking up behind me. It's on my jeans and tight. But as I grow older and I started to have knowledge of how important the glutes are, I was naturally a good squatter and naturally my glutes were well developed.
You know, yeah. And you bring up the next topic that I want to talk about, which is, I guess, like our views on society of what the butt has become. I think growing up, I don't think it was very. Like, I mean, there was a couple of things, you know, here and there, you know, songs and things like that would, you know, put an emphasis on a butt. But I feel like from what I can remember, having a big butt wasn't an attractive thing.
It wasn't a thing. 100%. Yeah. Yeah, it definitely wasn't a thing back in the day. But now it's all about the glutes. It's all about the glutes. What you look like in a pair of pants or a pair of jeans.
Yeah. What do you think happened? Do you think pop culture just all of a sudden, or it clearly was, I don't think it was like, oh man, I think all these people have lower back pains. Let's start talking about the butt more. I don't think that's what happened.
I think it's the advent of social media, Instagram, those fitness Instagram models on online. And the girls on Instagram, look at most of their page, they're always posting about glutes or they're posting pictures of glutes. And guys too, they start developing that, the fitness model. Right, the well-developed, wearing tight pants, and you got to have glutes when you're wearing tight pants or tight shorts. So I think the Instagram, the social media, that's when started the fitness influencers started making that happen in the importance of glutes and
So in terms of, let's say, you know, if I go in and I put in like a booty workout, you know, in my search on Instagram or on any social feed, you're going to get a whole list of, you know, ranges from like kickbacks or banded moves. And, you know, it's kind of like the only thing that you need to do to build like a big booty or a big butt is to do X exercises.
Yes.
What do you think about that? You know, and the message that puts out there where, you know, maybe from your background that, you know, like, you know what, I don't think it's gonna be possible to build something like that with just bands and 100%. Bands and exercises. Would you say that you can't?
I mean, if 99% of the time, the people who make those movements, those crazy movements, that they develop their body like with that, 99% of the time, they started with the basics first. They started with the squats. They started with the hamstring curls. They started with the deadlifts or the RDLs. And then after that, once they develop that good physique, and nobody wants to see that boring stuff all the time, right? And that's when they start to invent movements that they say, oh, this is what created my glutes. This is what caused my glutes to grow. But in reality, it's the basic movements that created that foundation first. And then you can start to do those other crazy stuff. That, I mean, it's not as effective, but it sells, right? Because what social media is, you have to sell yourself. And the best way to sell yourself is by doing crazy stuff.
So I guess like doing the crazy stuff, do you feel like sometimes a message gets lost of the basics at all or not at all?
Because 100%. Because what attracts audience? The crazy stuff, the wild jumping off of a BOSU ball with one leg and doing a hip abduction. It's the crazy stuff that attracts the audience. Mm-hmm. But and again, people forget that person didn't develop that glue without doing that. It's the basics that you have to do. So I always preach: do the basics first, and then we start doing advanced movements after. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What about genetics? You know, what about genetics? Did they come into play at all? Like, would you, you know, I really hate the idea that perhaps stereotypes, you know, play a certain way.
Yeah.
But, you know, like you, I find perhaps the Asian man in general is maybe a little bit smaller in 100%. Like physical size.
Yes. Okay. Genetics, being an Asian person and seeing, I had a white friend and a black friend, and we trained together, right? And I was the only Asian guy in the group. And we trained consistently together for 2 to 3 years. And the progression, we did the exact same thing. Every single day in university, at York University, we trained the exact same time. We tracked our foods and we trained the exact same way because we always trained together. The progression that they made compared to me, I have to train twice as hard. I have to push twice as hard. I have to be twice as diligent to create to develop as much as they did. Mm-hmm. So yes, being an Asian, I do find that being or genetics do play a role in the human body development, for sure.
But You said by doing twice as much, you were still able to catch up to where they are. So it can be done. It's just you got to find a different way to do it.
Exactly. You just got to work twice as hard.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's good to know that it can still be done, though, you know, and like knowing that it kind of, you know, it gives people hope, because I think a lot of times you can say, well, you know what, I'm Asian, I'm never going to be that ripped.
No.
You know, whatever it is, and be like, ah, you know what, forget it.
But absolutely not.
Yeah.
It can definitely be done, but you just have to work. Like, you just have to be diligent, be consistent. You have to work twice as hard, and you have to make sure you don't fall off the bandwagon. The most of the time people don't make progression is they fall off the bandwagon. They stop. There's consistency is what destroys everything. If you're consistent in what you're doing, no matter what you do, you will always achieve that goal.
Excellent. Excellent advice.
Yeah.
If I can shift the conversation over to nutrition, you touched upon it in a second there, where you say you were just always looking at thinking about the next meal, which is,
yes,
you often hear bodybuilders say, I'm just kind of like tired of eating, like I don't want to eat, you know. How much does nutrition play a role in developing muscle, developing size, developing anything really?
Yeah, so if you look at the macros breakdown, food is energy. And if you don't have proper nutrition, if you're not feeding your body well, if you're not using the right fuels, your muscles will not develop 100%. You can train as hard as you want, but if your nutrition isn't down pat, the physique that you're trying to aspire to, you can't develop that physique at all. Nutrition plays 100%. They say it's 50-50. I say it's 100% of everything, especially nutrition.
You're saying even if I work out and my diet is pretty crappy, I'm not going to see any change, is basically what you're saying, right?
You will see those beginner changes, but there will be a time when you stall and you won't make progression anymore. You will plateau. And that's when nutrition, being diligent of nutrition, comes into play. I mean, yeah. People will make progression in the beginning 100% of the time, but it's after a certain point where you really need to sit down and really think about how you're fueling your body to take that next step. Yeah.
And whenever clients ask me, like, you know, I want to look like this person, I want to look like that person, you know, I always kind of drive them towards like I like to think of it as like sports. I really like to tell them, like, okay, visualize, like, you want to have like an athletic looking body, like a sprinter, like a marathon runner. Within running, those people look different, right?
Yes.
Within itself, even though it's the same kind of movements. You know, if you want to look at someone who is going to build a certain type of look for themselves physically, I think there's none better than bodybuilders, fitness models, where
100%
this is what you do. You look in the mirror, you say that you're like, pretty much, I find bodybuilders are almost never happy. You know, they're happy, you know, with it, but you know, there's always like, oh man, you know, I think I can get more vascular. I think I can get more striations, right?
Yeah. We're never satisfied. Yeah. Never satisfied.
And a lot of that has to do with eating. And now even within the bodybuilding realm, of yes. things, there are different types of diets, but would you say the general consensus is would be, you know, a high carb diet, a high protein diet and a low carb diet within a certain period of time, perhaps a high carb diet if they're going through a period of time, right? Like, what would be a recommendation for if someone's doing like a 12-week cycle, all right, in terms of their dietary consumption, what is like, yes. what would the percentages macros be looking like?
So right now I'm in my progression stages or my improvement season. So I'm eating a lot more than when I start prep. So I'm eating a lot of carbs, I'm eating a lot of protein, and I'm eating moderate levels of fats. Fats are very important. Fats are not bad. And once you start prep, once you start to lean down, because right now I'm at a body percentage where it's respectable on stage, but I'm trying to develop those weaknesses of my body parts. So I'm increasing my calories, increasing my macros of protein and carbs. Now, once I start prep, protein levels will probably stay 1.2 grams, 1.5 grams per pound of body weight. Protein is very, very important. It keeps you satisfied. It keeps your muscles fed. And we start to play with the amount of carbs and fats. So at the beginning of prep, when I start, I would start with my carbs high. And then as we start to lean out, as we start to make progression with your body fat, as we start to drop, get leaner, we start to drop your carbs, and then we start to drop your fats as well. So we always manipulate carbs and fats as we progress through our leaning out stage. And yes, once we reach this part where we're satisfied with your physique, that's when we start to up your carbs or manipulate your carbs again.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you say, or like, maybe if you don't mind sharing, what are your dietary restrictions, would you find? Like, are you someone who eats, you know, all meats, like veggies? Are you that kind of person? I'm sorry, that kind of bodybuilder? Or do you follow like a vegan diet? Like what kind of, how do you get to those macro levels?
My three main staples are beef, chicken, salmon, and whitefish. So I always have a plethora of proteins because I find that your body, the enzymes in your stomach, they work really well with a different variety of proteins. Mm-hmm. A lot of guys who stick with chicken all the time, it's hard to digest that protein. So mm-hmm. by providing your body with different types of protein, I find that you can make better gains.
Okay. Your top 3-5 carbs then would be like sweet
white rice.
White rice.
White rice is good. Yes, white rice is good. Especially being Asian, we are built to assimilate white rice really, really well.
I'm glad you said that.
Yes. White rice is awesome, everybody. Eat your rice. You just got to eat it in moderation, and you got to time it properly to certain times of your day. White rice isn't bad. It's an awesome carb source. The second one would be potatoes, and the third one would be oatmeals.
Oatmeal.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Are you eating also white potatoes as well? Like you're not a yam fan?
100%. During prep, I don't stay away from those carbs because they digest well. One, they digest well. They're a fast acting carb. So if you time your nutrient properly, you time the time during your activity levels are the highest. If you time it around those at that time, those carb sources are a blessing because it fuels your workouts really, really well.
All right.
Yeah.
So, in terms of, let's say, meal numbers, then, like, are you intermittent fasting? Do you believe in that? Do you find, like, you know, 6 to 8 meals a day? Do you 3 meals a day, 1 meal a day? There's so many out there to kind of keep with.
Oh,
whatever you found works well.
I find that society now is they're very extremes. There's two extremes. And I find that people go too much on this side and then people go too much on the other side. I find that the people who make the most progression are the ones who are balanced in the center. So intermittent fasting is good. There are certain times where I do intermittent fasting. If I'm being in a butthead and I'm eating like junk the day before, I will intermittent fast the day after just to let my digestion rest. But the majority of the time I keep a balanced diet where I'm eating 4 to 5 meals a day. I'm keeping the fuel, the energy coming in consistently so that I don't crash. And when you crash, you start to crave. And when you start to crave, that's when you start to, whatever you see, you want to eat.
Absolutely. You know, for me, like one of the key things in our household is if we're going to buy a bag of chips, there's mm-hmm. there's no expectation that like it's going to last us the whole week, right? Like 100%. When we get home, we're going to open it.
Yeah.
Cookies, we're going to open it. Like it's going to be gone. So it sounds, you know, sounds boring, but don't buy it then, right?
Don't
like
exactly.
Only buy it when you're ready and you're like, all right, I'm going to eat it. And then Absolutely. Have no guilt about
yes.
it.
Yes. And if you find that if you don't prep your food properly, if you don't pre-make your meals, the first thing you go to is the junk food that you buy because it's the quickest thing, right? Because you're starving. You don't care. So I always prep your food, everybody. Always meal prep. Prep your food the day before so that it's easier access. And then you don't grab the junk that you have when you buy that stuff.
But what about to people who say, well, you know, I don't want to eat like chicken breast and salad every day or fish and salad. Like it sounds like bodybuilding type food is boring. Like, would you consider your food boring?
I'm a very lazy guy when it comes to cooking. So I would say there's two types of clients that I have. There's bodybuilding clients, there's prep clients that compete, and there's clients that are lifestyle clients. Lifestyle clients, I work with them and I develop a meal plan that's good for them, that they with foods that are tasting, that taste good, that you can use the seasoning, you can use the sauces. But again, you're controlling calorie intake, you're controlling macro intake, right? You're regulating your foods. Bodybuilding, you have to be a little more strict. So it is boring. It does suck. And you can't use the sauces that you want. You can't use the ketchup that you want. You can't use like the high calorie sugary sauces, you have to take those up. So I always tell my clients, do you want to be a lifestyle client or do you want to compete? If you want to compete, you got to suffer. And if you don't want to suffer, if you want to be a little more relaxed, become a lifestyle client. You will look not as good as a bodybuilder, but you will have a respectable physique.
Yeah. You know, that idea of like not as good as a bodybuilder, like I have a very similar talk myself, which is one thing like I get like a little like, it gets on my nerves just a little bit is when, you know, someone, they come and sit down with me and they say, okay, well, Jimmy, you know, I want to work out, you know, I want to build like a bigger chest and a shoulder, but you know, I don't want to look like one of those people, like in the magazines, like a bodybuilder. I'm like, how dare you, how dare you think that you would, as I said, it takes a special person. It takes a special dedication to get there.
100%.
How dare you? In my mind, you know, I think, but I get what they're saying too. Like it's, When they tell me that, is like, I also take pride. It's like, you know what? I don't want to put in that much effort, right? Like, like, you know, that's too much, right? Yes. But, you know, still, like, it still irks me a little bit because
I have that all the time. It's like, I have female clients that say, oh, I don't want those big muscles. And I always tell them, do you know how much effort, how much focus, how much consistency that you need to put in order for you to develop that physique? Mm-hmm. I guarantee you, the judging by what I see, you won't be able, you won't get there. We will get a respectable physique where you want, but you will never develop the I would say the bodybuilding, the big muscles that people are scared of, right?
Well, I call those women like you're gonna be like a tofu on a stick, right? Like you want to be skinny, but everything's gonna be soft. Exactly. You have no problem picking up a 20-pound bag and carrying it around everywhere, but you're worried about curling like 20 pounds, you know, or like squatting with 20 pounds, like. Let's relax you a little bit.
Exactly. Their main goal, those types of clients, their main goals is to just lose body fat.
Right. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. And so basically what it sounds like is when for your lifestyle clients,
yes,
they get to eat what they want to eat, is just not that much. Like a proportion.
Yes. Yeah. Portion control. And portion control. I mean, I don't want to say you have to live by a scale, but you have to use a scale to know how much food you're taking in. Because most of the time you overfeed yourself. And by the time you're done your meal, oh my God, I'm so goddamn full. I want my clients to eat until they're satisfied. I don't want my clients to eat until they're overly stuffed. Mm-hmm. So portion control, using a scale, know what types, how much food you're taking in. And then after a while, you start to self-regulate. And you start to understand, oh, this is the portion I need to be eating, right? I can see the portion of food. I can see that. So I'm going to put this much on my plate because I know this is exactly what I need to be just satisfied, to be happy, but not overstuff myself and overeat.
Exactly. I mean, nothing wrong with the overeating, like Phil, you being a former fat guy.
Oh, 100%.
I don't know about you. I don't know how you feel about this, but like, I always feel like the fat guy is still in me and he wants to come out anytime, you know, just like he wants to overeat every single time.
100%. But I have days where I'm overeating. So yeah. I have days where I have my cheat meals. I have my cheat days. I have food that I'm craving for. I'll eat them 100%, but you got to make sure you're not eating them every day. Right. Yeah. There's certain days or there's certain periods of time where you can overindulge, but you can't overindulge every single day. That's when you start to gain weight, gain fat.
And I really like how the segmentation that you have is when you meet somebody, say, hey, well, you're going to be bodybuilding or you're going to be lifestyle, you know, and like you set the tone there, like, okay, bodybuilding is this.
Yes.
Lifestyle is this.
100%. Right? So,
yeah.
100%.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. All right, Phil. Well, look, I appreciate you coming on the show. It's been amazing to chat with you. You're so full of energy. I'm glad Jamie was able to kind of hook me up with you. And
thank you, sir. It was a pleasure.
Yeah. And for me, it's like I always like kind of leave the guests with the last word here. For anybody out there who is looking to make a change, whether it's in their glutes, their body, or you know, anything like that, is there a piece of advice that you would give that person listening right now?
I think we touched base on this one. It's being consistent at what you do. And if you find that you love doing it, you will find that you will always have consistency. And once that consistency sets in, that physique goal, that life goal, the any type of goal at all, if you're consistent and you love what you're doing, if you have passion with it, you will go far and you will achieve that.
All right.
100% of the time.
You heard that from Philip. No. Phil, how can people get in touch with you? How can people get to train with you, man? How can they get to know this super energetic, you know, fitness love and bodybuilder, man?
So we do have our Instagram social medias, Conquer Fitness_Bloor West or Conquer Fitness Bloor West. Search us up there. That's my main headquarters, 35,000 square feet facility, fully well-equipped gym. And we also have F45 Lambton Kingsway. And we also have F45 Bloor West Village. You can contact me there or you can grab me on my Instagram. It's PNGO_.
All right.
Send me a DM and I can Yeah, I
have all that information, everybody. So don't go out there grabbing like a pen and paper. Don't hurt yourselves if you're listening to this at the weight room, all yes. right, or in your home. Check out our show notes. We're gonna have all that information out there. There are tons of different ways to get in touch with Phil and to work out with him. So no excuse to not get that going. All
yes,
right,
sir.
Phil. Thank you so much for coming on the show, and
thank you,
hope to have you back one day, man. It was really, really fantastic to talk to you, man.
Absolutely, I would love to come back.
Hey everyone, that concludes another episode of the Remix My Fitness podcast. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. I know, 100%, I know I did. I know I enjoyed talking to Phil, and I can't wait to have him back onto the show. Is there a burning question that you have about getting fit at home, about losing weight at home, how to develop a particular part of your body? Hit me up. Don't be shy. Hit me up on social, on Instagram, on Facebook. I said LinkedIn at the beginning of the show, so you can hit me up there as well. And of course, email mckim@remixmyfitness.com. I am not a hard man to find, all right? So everyone, have a great week. We will be back next week with another episode. So until next time, don't forget, go out there, set some goals. Challenge yourself, because ain't nobody going to do it for you. And don't forget to have fun. Peace.